Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 116 for August 25, 2011. Goatees and fancy scarves. Watch Autoline After Hours live at AutolineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store. Thanks for joining us, folks. And Peter, thanks for coming back to the studio here with me.
Always good to be here.
Hey, that was pretty awesome last week at the Dream Cruise.
Yeah, it was awesome. We could have done another 3 hours, I'm sure.
Oh, easy. And Jim and Bob Hall could have filled in 2 hours and 57 seconds of it, or 57 minutes of it.
Yeah. I didn't actually go to the cruise itself that day because I understand a big storm went through and then shut it down early. I was at the American Le Mans series in Elkhart Lake.
How was that?
Absolutely a spectacular.
I know you were writing about it in your site.
Just a spectacular. What road racing should be was just fantastic. And lots of good rumors coming out of there. Spent some time with Scott Atherton. And you know, everyone says IndyCar belongs there on that weekend, and I'm hopeful in 2012 that's going to happen. It'll be a doubleheader up there.
Well, that'd be great, and as you well remember, you know, that's when they had the Detroit Grand Prix here on Belle Isle. They did ALMS and IndyCar, Saturday and Sunday kind of venue. It went over great.
Yeah, plus all the drivers want to be there. The teams want to be there. It's kind of the heritage of IndyCar. You know, Formula 5000 ran there before IndyCar did. I remember going to Formula 5000, seeing Mario Andretti and Brian Redman and David Hobbs battling in those...
AJ run there, too, or no?
Yeah, AJ had his pretty much almost finished his career. He I think he lost his brakes at the end of the pit straight.
And, crashed pretty heavy.
Yeah, broke his legs. It was bad. But, you know, Road America is the premier road racing circuit in the U.S., so I expect IndyCar to be there. I also think that... we will see a third road race in the Sprint Cup, and we will see Michigan or Pocono lose one of their second dates, and we will see that third road race at Road America, and it'll be in the Chase. Don't be surprised if that happens. It's going to be...
Well, that's something you've been talking about, how they need to get a road course.
But the rumblings are getting louder, and they're coming from within NASCAR, so... I wouldn't be surprised if along about 2014 we see that change in the NASCAR schedule, which would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would.
And other racing news, Danica is officially leaving IndyCar.
Going to NASCAR, though in the Nationwide Series,
Nationwide,
right?
But with a partial grouping of Sprint Cup races.
Why do you think that is? Why mainly Nationwide for now?
Well, because Toni Stewart basically confirmed that she's going to be in Sprint Cup in 2013.
Uh-huh.
So... I think she's going to have her hands full, but...
Oh, it's such a competitive series. That's why I wondered if she's going into Nationwide, because she'll go in with a strong team, better chance of performing well there.
Well, she's been doing those races, so she has to run a full season there to really, really get the flow of it. Mm-hmm. Best of luck to her.
Yeah, it's brutal when you see other very top-notch drivers... Jacques Villeneuve,
Dario
Franchitti.
He had a bad luck when he got a broken leg.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, even you look at somebody like Montoya, who's really good.
No,
he struggles in that series.
Well, he's very good, and he's right there in just about every race, but that just tells you, because I think he's one of the most talented drivers in the world, period.
But shows you how competitive a series it is.
Yeah. So what happened in the car industry this week besides?
I thought there was a lot of interesting things that were going on. First, this announcement with Ford and Toyota teaming up to do hybrid trucks together, and that came out of the blue.
Out of the blue,
did not leak at all.
No.
In fact, I think it caught people within Ford and within Toyota by surprise. I think it was only known at the very, very top.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I've had a lot of people say, is Ford crazy? Why would they share all their truck stuff with Toyota? And my read of it is, well, they're not. You know, everybody knows when you look at the end of this decade and how CAFE standards really start to get tough, including for trucks and SUVs. You know, when Mark Royce was on this show a while back, even he said he didn't see how you could avoid electrification in trucks and pickups.
Yeah, they're all going to be hybrids.
They're going to have at least some hybrid models to balance it all out. And who knows if it'll sell. I mean, GM's got hybrid trucks and SUVs right now, and they can't give them away. There's no interest in these things whatsoever. So if I'm Ford, I'm thinking, what the hell do I do? I got to develop the system. It's going to be really expensive. Hey, let's call Toyota. Let's see if we can split the cost here.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to give away any secrets. It's just focused on one part of the trucks.
So. Right. I don't see them sharing platforms, bodies, nothing like that. I just see, in fact, I could see, you know, Ford saying, hey, Toyota, we'll take the motor and the transmission. You take the power electronics and the battery and, you know, just literally split the project down the middle and not only share the cost, but cut the development time in half as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that it was Ford and Toyota.
Yeah.
You know, GM had been doing a whole lot with Toyota in the past, and Toyota is a company that, by and large, likes to go it alone. And, you know, they've sort of put themselves up on the pedestal as the masters of hybridization. So the fact that they would want to split this cost with Ford tells you, I think everybody's worried about it. They're worried about the fuel economy standards.
Yeah, plus Toyota's been knocked down a couple notches. Then, of course, they introduced the new Camry on the same day that Porsche releases photos of the 2012 911. I thought that was just like, bad luck that. But the Camry, you know, you read the specs, I'm sure it's better. You said the interior's it's nicer, but God.
It is, but it isn't either.
It doesn't look like anything. I mean, the landscape has changed. You've got the Focus, you've got the Cruze, you've got the Elantra. Cars with real visual personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And this Camry is just like, you know, it's a rolling piece of white bread going down the road. You know?
It's even worse than that in the sense that 4 years from now, because remember, that's the design cycle, right?
Yeah, 4 years
from now. 4 years from now, it is going to look so old.
Yeah.
So old.
Yeah, you mentioned that on your daily, and that's such a good point. It's just, wow.
And, you know, if you look at this thing from a side profile, it could be a Corolla. I mean, there's nothing distinguishing about it whatsoever. I think from a styling standpoint, it actually takes a step back from the current car. And, yeah, look, they've made improvements to it. I got a chance to drive it. Very quiet, very smooth, lots of room inside. You know, everything that the Camry buyer would really want in the car.
And for a lot of people, it'll be perfect, but
it's not going to be
picture,
as many of them as in the past.
No.
They're not going to get the same number of buyers.
But I think it's going to pace the Daytona 500, if I'm not mistaken, which is,
Well, they gave it a gaudy paint job to give it some sort of pizzazz, because, I mean, that's the only way that you can put character lines into the car is with tapes and stripes. It's not in the sheet metal.
No, it isn't.
The other thing is the interior, it's good, but there's a couple of real cheesy things to it. Instead of having the top of the instrument panel blend into the doors, they tried to do it, but on the top of the IP is this stitching, which is nice, but the stitching doesn't carry over into the door panels. In fact, the door panel, you know, how it sort of flares in, really doesn't match up well. And to my eye, it was pretty jarring.
Well, and there's some good interiors out there in the Cruze and the Focus.
Cruze is very good. And Focus, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, real visual stimulation going on in those interiors, and I don't know. I really don't know.
It's it's going to be a struggle for them. Not in the first year. I think they'll have a lot of people that have been waiting in the market, you know, because of the earthquake. There hasn't been the inventory. They might have bought the current generation, but they just felt, no, I'm not going to buy now. I think there'll be a surge when this car comes out. But I give it about a year, and then I think they're going to really struggle to hit their sales numbers.
Speaking of surge, the Surge Man is going to unveil a Maserati based on the Grand Cherokee in Frankfurt, because he wants him some of that Cayenne market for Maserati. Good luck with that. I don't know.
Why don't you think it'll work?
Well, to me, well, maybe that's just me, but the Maserati still has some, it's an exotic name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Porsche was too, but Porsche was somewhat more approachable. And if it was a Maserati, you think, you
exotic.
Know. And I think, I don't know, does that immediately mean that all the Maserati dealers in the U.S. are just going to sell those? Because their sales are like nothing.
That's right.
So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Good luck with
that. Well, I think you hit it right. I mean, the Cayenne's been so overwhelmingly awesome for Porsche. Maybe not for the pure diehards, but from a bottom line standpoint.
Oh, yeah. No,
sales.
I beat that to death in my column, and I finally gave up. It's just like this whole branding thing, it's gone now. All the age-old lessons, it's just, what are you going to do? I will admit that I drove the new Cayenne, because the first one I thought was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I still do. The new Cayenne actually feels like, and from what I understand, Porsche engineers actually spent more than 10 minutes with it. And you can tell by the way it drives.
Mm-hmm.
It's lighter. And then they're bringing out their version of the Audi Q5, which will be very interesting. That'll be a smaller Porsche. What am I talking about? Porsche shouldn't be building those, but they make money hand over fist.
Well, that's at the end of the day with, you know,
what are
companies
their two biggest
business
sellers right now? The Cayenne and the Panamera.
Yeah. And both high margins. Not that there's low margin Porsches,
yeah,
but those are especially high margin Porsches.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think, you know, Sergio's not just looking at the U.S. market, but China, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I get all that.
Luxury SUVs are red hot the world over.
I mean, the Chinese can't get enough of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just be liking them some SUVs over there. I don't know. Crossovers. You put a crossover tag on it, they want it. So.
Hey, another thing that came out last Friday was the Cadillac CL.
Oh, it's just gorgeous. Really. And, you know, we've talked about it, but I wrote about it. You know, GM, in the last 8 years, they can't afford to do stuff like this unless they're telegraphing something. The only car that didn't was the 16, which actually telegraphs some design
some
elements.
Some cues, right.
But this telegraphs the Uber sedan they are working on for real.
Right.
It's going to be.
So they just showed the convertible now, not to give too much.
Yeah,
away.
But the sedan is going to be that. $100,000 at first, and then they're going to add that roadster down the road, which will be spectacular. I mean, it looks like a Cadillac should look. I mean, it's just, I thought it was stunning.
How'd you like those headlamp treatments? Very vertical lamps in the front, very different kind of treatment than we've seen from Cadillac or anybody for that matter.
Yeah, just eliminating all the other things and just have the lighting. When they're on their game, they're pretty damn good over there at GM Design.
They are. And you know what I like is the upsweep on the lower part of the rear end. It just transforms the look of that car.
I remember walking through the design staff with Ed Welburn, and we stumbled upon, now that I see it, it was the interior for this concept. He said, "You didn't see that." I said, "Yes, I did, Ed." I didn't quite. I knew it was for the Uber sedan or something,
mm-hmm,
but there it was that car.
Mm-hmm.
It was a full buck, and it's just gorgeous.
It's such a bold statement. It really is.
And yeah, it's ballsy. It's great. It's what American design should be, I actually think. I mean, just throw it out there.
Right.
This is an American luxury car. We aren't trying to be like anybody else. This is what we do.
Right.
And be proud of it and stand by it. And sure enough, it looks fabulous.
You know, the grill is so interesting to me because the grill actually looks very... If you just had the grill and hung it up on a wall, you'd go, well, that's... Isn't that on the DTS right now? And so they've kept this design cue that's really, you know, very traditional, and yet the car itself is not at all traditional. It's a bold statement.
Now that I've seen the next-gen CTS, I understand where that grill's going.
Uh-huh.
But the interior is just... I mean, I walked literally right by the Buck, and it was just like, you couldn't keep your eyes off of it. It was just... something else.
That's good. Hey, why don't we take our first break right now?
Okay.
Ben, let's thank our good friends from Chevrolet. Not only does the Chevrolet Cruze offer a ton of features, it features some of the best safety and maintenance in the business. The Cruze comes with rear park assist, which beeps if you're about to back into something. It has rollover mitigation, which means the car senses if it might roll over, and applies the brakes to the outside front tire to bring the car back under control. And it has OnStar vehicle diagnostics, which sends you emails about the latest status of your car. And you can learn a lot more about it at Chevrolet.com/cruise. And joining us right now, we've got our guest for the evening, Mark Trossel, from right now, chief designer for Roush, Roush Industries. And
what? Roush?
Yeah. Right. Mark, great having you here with Peter and I for AutoLine After Hours.
Thank you for inviting me here.
So my first question's got to be is, why does Jack Roush need a chief designer? Well, what are you going to be getting into here?
Well, I'll tell you what. Obviously, I'm on a pretty steep learning curve about Roush, even though I felt that I knew them well. I've known a lot of the players there for a lot of years. But what I am very impressed with is there's two sides to Roush, obviously. You know, the Roush Fenway Racing, everybody knows that, and that's high visibility. What people don't realize is the diversity within the company. They do everything from NVH development for the various car companies to entertainment, working with Disney, for instance,
what?
On engineering rides and doing
You're
development.
Kidding. I had
Absolutely.
No idea.
Absolutely. And a lot of composites. They're very vertically integrated as far as ability to do. As we all know, they have a very strong presence in the engineering end.
Powertrain especially.
Powertrain, crate motors, certainly the Roush Mustang that's out in the marketplace today with their supercharger edition, things like that. They are extremely diverse. When I talk about being vertically integrated, they have their own in-house tool capabilities of doing hard tools, injection molding, robotic paint lines, things of that sort that amazes me. I'm still learning. Like I say, it's been only a couple weeks, and I'm getting a cram course in what they're all about. To answer your question, where I see the opportunity is, let's face it, they're in the niche vehicle end of things with their Mustang.
And you got a strong background in it.
And I have played around with that for a number of years, going back to my ASC days.
And we should explain a little bit about that for people who didn't know. That was formerly known as the American Sunroof Corporation,
right,
and run by a guy named Heinz Prechter.
Heinz Prechter, who was very well known throughout Detroit. And I feel I had a great career there with my 35 years. But if you look back through my history, the so-called niche vehicle end of it really seems to be what I'm all about. Because I can go all the way back to, I had my first car when I was 13 years old. A Model A coupe. My father was into proper restorations on vintage cars, and I always wanted to modify them and do something a little different to them. And so I went through that. Of course, the years I had at ASC, I mean, we did everything from early on, the ASC McLarens, which I was heavily involved with, GNX, GTP Turbo, Pontiac Grand Prix, all the way up to later years with the SSR that we did with the retractable roof with General Motors. We were involved from the very initial sketches working with Wayne Cherry on that project. And that certainly was a niche vehicle. And so I see Roush as a kind of a combination of my past history. I've also been playing with, I think some of the folks may know, the vintage hot rods. I have a company called American Speed, which when I was still at ASC, we did what they call a Dearborn Deuce, which was a 32 Ford that we tried to kind of bring into the...
There it is up in the screen.
On the screen.
That's
here,
the new one.
That's the new one. That's the 33, the Speed 33. What's unique about it is the fact that we retained the roadster look, but it has power windows. It has a convertible top that folds up and stows under a hard tonneau. So we tried to take the vintage look of the car and bring it up to modern, I guess, comforts, if you will, with the...
Now, are those turnkeys, or...?
We now, both cars that you see there are turnkeys, and we started off just manufacturing the body, but we all know, you know, what's going on in the economy today. There are still players out there that want something unique. And you brought up an earlier comment about American design. You got to be there. You got to be in their face with it. There is where I see a fantastic, I guess, legacy of U.S. and American design. We all experienced the Woodward Dream Cruise here in the last couple of weeks. You look at the iconic cars and the following of those vehicles, Camaros, Mustangs, Chargers, and Challengers, and on and on. The American hot rod, in my mind, fits into that. We have some of our cars in Brazil, in Denmark, Australia, New Zealand, one in the Philippines. So it's all about Americana, in my mind. And that's what we tried to capture with the...
So are you going to keep your hand in that and still do the Roush thing, or?
I am, yes, yes. I have, you know, a fair amount of time and money invested into that, and I don't want to just walk away.
Where are they built? Are they built?
They're actually, and that's another thing that we really take pride in, they're all U.S. Every component you see on there is made here in the U.S., or more specifically in Southeast Michigan. The bodies are stamped to the company called Oakley Industry. And I worked with them back in the SSR days. I know their history. So they supply the stampings. We develop the convertible top. The castings on the windshield are done here in Detroit. The glass is done in Western Michigan, on and on. So we take pride, unlike some of the other replica bodies that you can buy today that are coming out of China and whatnot. We take pride in the fact that everything you see is...
How much do they sticker for?
Well, like I tell our customers that ask
it depends.
It depends. and that is exactly the bottom line.
How much customizing you want.
Exactly. Well, and I will tell you, you talk about Roush. We have two of our cars that have just been completed that have the very high-end Roush 427 IR electronic fuel-injected motors, $30,000 motors. And you get into unique... suspension components that come out of California, some of the high-end custom builders out there. You're talking point of entry, we say typically is about 125, and you'll go up to pretty close to 200 grand then for a car. But they're all unique. They're all different. We sit down with a customer. We talk about what their desires are. How are they going to use the car? What do they want it to be? And then we try and work with them to get to that. So it truly does depend on what you get. So
how many people are actively involved in design at Roush that you're going to be working with?
Well, right now, here's what I would say about Roush. Very good capability. In fact, one of my first assignments there is working on a vehicle that potentially we'll show up even this year at the SEMA show. And so I'm working with a group that's been in place that is, in my mind, just spectacular on their ability to do Class A surface. So we all know that times have changed. I won't say an old guy. I'm a well-seasoned guy in the industry. How's that? And the days of doing 2D sketches and, you know, a clay model, We all know, even though today, anybody in the design industry will tell you it's not just computer to production. There's iterative stages, and you folks are well aware of that. But what I'm getting at with it, Roush has in place some very solid foundational capabilities on Class A engineering skills, really strong. They have a studio, but they have the appropriate appointments, if you will, Torres Mills, clay modeling capability. What I hope to bring to it is, again, with my background and a lot of the connections that I have and folks I've worked with over the years, I'm hoping we can take that, foundation, if you will, to another level. And both from an outside resource that folks come along and they may have, just like contract engineering. Again, Roush does a lot of fundamental engineering, vehicle, and beyond the typical what we consider Detroit automotive. Military, like I mentioned with the rides and race car performance and on and on. I want to be a part of that and provide perhaps another element to what they could provide to an end customer. The other side of it is certainly I want to play in the sandbox with the Roush Performance Mustangs and what other future products they might have. So I'm excited about it. I see a great potential. And again, it falls in line very well with my background and what I've done over the many years I've been playing.
You know, I didn't realize how vertically integrated Roush Industries is. And that ought to play very well for what you want to do.
Right.
I'm astonished in this country at how much specialty car manufacturing goes on.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm blown away by it, really, and more entrants coming into that sandbox all the time.
Right.
But to have tooling capability, molding capability, stamping capability,
right.
Not a whole lot of them have operations like that.
Not at all. I mean, they truly can provide what I've learned in my short time there. They truly can provide a full vehicle service support, whatever it might be. Packaging from general layout, configuration packaging, you know, interior books, full clay models, chassis engineering, driveline development, manufacturing of components, exterior components, interior trim. It goes on and on what their internal capabilities are. So. That's why I find it exciting. It should be a good time for me.
You know, when I go to launch Dymaxion Motors, I might have to call Roush to build my first prototypes.
There you go. They can do it. They can do it. Yep.
Hey, you mentioned that your father was into cars. And, of course, we got to talk a little bit about your son, too, just so the audience knows. Your son, Mark, is a
chief designer of SRT now at Chrysler. And it's in
played
the blood.
A big role in the Challenger, didn't he? Pretty much do that car.
He has played a great role in the facelift on that vehicle. I know he's involved in, I hope I'm allowed to say it, but the next if they were to do a next generation Viper, he's playing a pretty significant role.
He might be involved
role.
In that. Might
he
be.
Might be involved in that, but I'm proud of him. Obviously, he's. Been with Chrysler for over 15 years now, and I'm happy to see that Chrysler seems to be perhaps headed in the right direction these days with product. And let's face it, it's all about product at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I think they're doing a good job on that. So our relationship as father and son is a little, maybe a little more guarded these days. I can't tell him what I'm doing, and he can't tell me what he's doing. But he grew up around it, just as I was influenced by my father. My son grew up, we worked in the garage together on doing a Mustang Capri, redoing it years ago with some ASC McLaren parts and when he was still in high school. And he does have a 32 Roadster. Here's a young guy that's into hot rods today. And so he's having fun with that. But it's good to see him in the business. So it's kind of fun.
How did you arrive at ASC way back?
Interesting story there. When I graduated from design school, I actually started at Ford Motor Company and started in the Ford Design Studios, the Mustang Studio of all things. So here you go, full circle.
Full circle.
And I grew up in the Cleveland, Ohio area, and so to me, to have an opportunity to come to Detroit and play with the big boys, it was like, wow, this is it. This is exciting. So unfortunately, maybe I wasn't too smart at the time. I didn't realize that that was the Vietnam era, and I had a 2S student deferment in college. And so 5 months into my career at Ford, I was drafted and had to play Army for a couple of years and went back to Ford. And I was introduced to Heinz Prechter from a colleague of mine at Ford. And Heinz just had a passion about him and you know, really got you fired up. And I loved his vision. And, you know, I'm a hardcore car guy. You know, I like to get my hands into as many pieces of it as I can. And Heinz had a vision that he made me an offer and said, come on, I'd like to have you be a part of where I'm going. And that was very much in the formative years of ASC. And so I made that decision and had, you know, the first 35 years there were fantastic. And again, I had the opportunity to become the first designer, but expand it to the point that, you know, we had a studio in Huntington Beach, California. We had our 8-year contract with GM Design in Warren, where we had upwards of 100 people there under design contract, which is kind of unique in the industry to provide that kind of service to an OE. Typically, they want to keep it very close to the vest. But did that, had the studio in Southgate, and that's how I got started there. And you know, to me, it was a great ride. It's a lot different, certainly, than being in an OE. But the good thing is, I got to travel the world, spend time in Sweden working with Saab. We actually competed with Pininfarina on a full vehicle design development on a Saab 900, which ours was selected as their production car. I worked with folks at Porsche, with Harm Ligai, when he was still head of Porsche Design, did a number of programs with them. We did the 944 and the 968 Cabriolet, worked on a four-door. You talk about where Porsche's at today, guess what? We were involved in doing an actual prototype four-door based on the 928 many, many years ago. And
now I understand that Porsche is going to do a two-door coupe version of the Panamera.
Really?
Yeah, short wheelbase.
That would be interesting.
That could be pretty good.
Yeah.
It could be. It would improve the proportions of the car.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, look, let's take a quick break. We got to come back to this. But, Ben, right now we got to thank our friends at Hyundai. With gas prices where they are these days, if you're after fuel efficiency, you need to check out the Hyundai Sonata. There's three different models to choose from. The 2.4-liter GDI, which delivers a segment-leading 35 miles per gallon. Then there's the 2-liter turbo, which offers 274 horsepower, yet delivers 33 miles per gallon. And the brand-new hybrid that provides a combined 37 miles per gallon. And you can learn a lot more about each one at HyundaiSonata.com. So you heard Mark, Peter and I talking about the Cadillac CL earlier. You must have seen pictures of it. I'm dying to think. What do you make of it?
Overall, I have to say, I think Cadillac has done an outstanding job. You look at the new CTS, the current coupe. CTS, the coupe is just
stunning.
Spectacular on mm-hmm. the highway. That's a gutsy move, frankly, in my mind. It's a reach out there. I think it's gorgeous. And if you look at, again, we talk about Americana design and what's unique, and you know, I'll go back to my early days at ASC when we put vinyl tops on them and bright, you know, big chrome strips and noses and all that type of thing, and that's what sold at the time. And you know, obviously they got to the point that, all right, we want to change directions here and what Cadillac's all about. And so my take is, in general, I would say I think Cadillac's done an outstanding job, and I've spent some time in the CTS, and you know, the GM used to get challenged a little bit on the interiors, and obviously they've made great strides on really doing a nice job on that. So I think it'll do well. I like where they're headed.
What do you think is missing in car design these days?
Well, I'll tell you, I think we're seeing a resurgence. I can recall some years back when it was all about the so-called international design. Cars should look the same all over the world. I think that was a major mistake. We talk about what is unique about America, United States. And there is some DNA there in total. The iconic cars that I talked about before, Camaro, Mustang, and on. That we shouldn't lose. We really shouldn't lose. I also heard you talking about Toyota's latest effort. And to me, there's always a need out there for appliances, vehicles that are viewed as basic, no-frill transportation. But I guess the folks like us that are in the industry, we want more out of it than that.
Sure you do. I mean, because, you know, think back to the original Mini. That was a basic, no-frills, cheap car, but what an iconic design.
Right.
You can have, you know, something for the masses that's not expensive, but you can make it look good, too. And, you know, I think Toyota's, you know, played it too safe. In fact, my way of describing it is by trying to play it safe, they're taking a huge risk. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as Peter and I were talking about, if you look at the Hyundai Sonata, Ford Fusion, Chevy Malibu, or Cruise, a lot more character. Even the Volkswagen stuff, even though there's a predictability to it, there's something that's so German about it that just works.
I agree.
And I think Toyota's taken a big risk. And, you know, Bob Lutz made, a really interesting point in his latest book where one of the reasons he explained why GM design had gotten so bland is they gave too much power to the vehicle line executives, the VLEs. And the VLEs, by and large, are engineers, and they're making decisions based on timing of the program, are they hitting their budget, that sort of thing, working with all these diverse elements, engineering, manufacturing, and whatnot. So they're trying to be almost politicians in a way, too. That doesn't work for design. I mean, design, you get out there, you make a statement, and you stick with it, and I understand sometimes the designers go too far and it becomes very complex to engineer or even more to manufacture. Mm-hmm. But man, if you want people to buy your stuff, you first have got to get them to look at it, and only design can do that.
It's still an emotional purchase in my mind. You may need a set of new wheels or whatever, but you know what? When you get out there and you start looking, it's driven by emotion at the end of the day.
Design is the ultimate initial product differentiator, and it's going to be more so as, you know, we have technologies that are similar underneath the skin.
Right.
You're going to buy the skin.
Yep, I agree.
Absolutely.
To that point, you look at all the auto manufacturers have progressed so greatly on quality. You look at the door gaps and margins and fit and finish and whatnot today. They're phenomenal from where they were 10 years ago. To your point, what's the differentiation on them? It's what does it look like? How do you feel when you're sitting inside behind
it? How do you feel walking up to it? Yeah. How do you feel when you shut it and you walk away from it?
Yeah.
That's why Panamera owners, I don't know if you noticed, but they always back into a space so that when they come out, they just look at the front. Hey, it's not so bad.
I actually think the front end is one of the weak points of the car. Yeah. There's a blandness to it that I don't quite like. But to drive the car is phenomenal.
The car drives fast.
And the interior is awesome, too. So, I mean, but,
I noticed the new 911 is kind of a combination of the Panamera interior and the Carrera GT interior. It's really, really good.
Wow. Nice.
What else do you like out there when you look around and see what's coming out these days, Mark?
Well, again, here, I'll go back and make a comment. Something that really sticks with me is, you know, I talk about my history with the early muscle cars and the cars that kind of lit my fire at that time. People today don't realize what they have to choose from today, though. If you have the opportunity to drive a new Mustang, I happened to have the opportunity here last week to drive one of the Roush new Mustang with the supercharger on, and on and on. And I've driven the new Camaro SS, and my son has had a number of nice Chrysler products, SRT, Challenger, and whatnot. Those cars are phenomenal today. You don't even realize the speed you're doing in them. NVH, they're quiet, they're refined. You know, the motor revs like crazy, and you're there before you know it. Fit and finish, on and on. And people get hung up on, and I'm one of them, you know, you look back and, oh, yeah, gee, I'd love to, you know, big block Camaro back and whatever. Those cars couldn't hold a candle. They didn't handle, they didn't stop.
When you go drive an old car, I mean, yeah, we all love them, but when you actually go drive one of them, it's like, oh, okay. Then you realize that the cars today are just in a whole nother dimension.
Yep, they really are. So that, which I think is a great step forward.
Hey, it's getting to be time for rapid fire. So before we get to that, though, we've got to take a break, and they've got to get me the questions for rapid fire, too. But, Ben, let's thank our friends at Bridgestone. Bridgestone is featuring its third generation of run-flat tires with groundbreaking new technology. Current run-flat tires can offer peace of mind for consumers, but the added mass and the stiffer sidewalls can compromise ride comfort and fuel efficiency. The new third-generation Bridgestone run-flat tires reduce heat and improve performance and ride comfort. Whether you're a program manager in the industry or just looking for a set for your personal car, check it out at BridgestoneTire.com. Okay, well, this is the part of the show, Mark, where we turn to our audience questions. So, Ben, let's kick it off with that graphic. Okay, the first one comes in from Goggles Pisano, who wants to know, Mr. Trossel, what do you think of the styling of the Iacocca Mustang?
Well, I'll make some comments. If you go all the way back to certainly the first generation, which I consider the Iacocca Mustang, given the time, let's face it, it was a marketing genius. It was an extremely successful product. And I loved the first generation Mustang. My first new car was a 67 S-Code big block four-speed fastback. It was the same color and everything as the Bullet car. And I loved those cars. The 67-8 to me was a little nicer than the first gen, just because it was a little larger, but yet it was still a tight, nicely done package. We could all go on and say what happened when they built the Mustang II, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Is he referring to the recent Iacocca Mustang?
Was there another one?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm
like
sorry.
2 years
yes,
ago.
Yes. Okay. I am aware of that. And actually, Metal Crafters built, I think, 50 of those cars. Mm-hmm. I apologize. I went back to the original.
Yeah, no, I did too. Iacocca. That's what I thought the question referred
but,
to.
But yes, that's a significant piece of work. The entire greenhouse was changed on it. There was some beautiful execution and whatnot on it. And from the standpoint, I think it's more of a designer statement than it is something that hits you.
Yeah.
That, you know, I believe those cars go for 100 plus, over 100 grand. It's a nicely refined car, very well done. You know, I don't know if it's something people will obviously are going to go out and grab hold of, so...
Okay, next one. Jeremy from Dallas says, I always thought designer types wore flashy pocket squares or weird scarves. And for those who are just listening, Mark's not wearing anything but like a fairly plain blue shirt.
Well, I have facial hair, so maybe that gives me a little different look. But, we're not all out there on the fringes.
Mike D. White says, which one worked on the 1998 LH program? I think maybe he's referring to Mark Jr.?
Mm-mm. Not the 98, no. I would go all the way back and give Tom Gale credit for being the driver behind that vehicle. I mean, that was the Tom Gale days, and Tom certainly did some great things at Chrysler, so I'd give him credit.
Here's a non-design comment from Will, who says, didn't GM and Daimler Chrysler already team up on the rear-wheel drive hybrid transmission technology that GM now uses? Thus, the Ford-Toyota partnership seems natural. And that's a good point. It wasn't just GM and Daimler Chrysler, but BMW is part of that, too.
Yeah, the dual-mode hybrid.
The dual-mode hybrid. But is GM the only one using that now? Chrysler's not using it at all. I don't think Daimler or BMW are using it either.
Unless they're using it in that X6 hybrid, I don't know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm not sure. I should look into that. Mind VW says, why aren't there any industry-leading battery hybrid technology companies like LG in the U.S.? What's happened to industry-leading innovation in the U.S.? Well, there is. There's A123, which is an American.
And several others that are flying under the radar.
There are several others.
Here in Michigan, there's a couple of them coming.
There's
up.
A couple of them, and in Indiana as well. There's some advanced battery companies there, too. So it's not just LG, but LG is clearly a mega player in the field. And that's what GM signed up with for the Volt, although they signed up with A123, who, by the way, is building all their electric vehicle batteries about 2 miles from where we're sitting right now. So very local to us here. George from Brooklyn says, and this is to you, Peter, comparing the Camry to white bread is an insult to white bread.
I guess I'd agree.
Mitch says, Peter, every week you have a rant for us. Has the Tuesday night ever come when you had nothing?
Yes, there has been more days than I care to admit to when I'm writing my column, Wednesday column, at 5 in the morning on Wednesday, sometimes even 8 in the morning. Sometimes, you know, it's like a gift. I can't explain it, and then it goes away.
Yeah, writing's funny for me. If I know what I want to write about, boom, it just goes together. If I got to think about, boy, what do I write about now, it can take forever.
I've been doing it for 12 years. It's a long slog.
It can be.
And I can't phone it in because all of my followers would accuse me of phoning it in. So you got to stay on it.
That's right.
I don't mind.
Okay, Scotty in Cleveland's got a question for you, too. Did you already know about what the CL concept looked like before Cadillac unveiled it last week?
In my meanderings through GM Design with Ed, you know, when you ever do that with Ed, you always have to keep your eyes open. And I walked, or they showed me some stuff on the shape of Cadillac to come. And on some of the stuff they were showing, I saw the Uber sedan sitting there. I didn't say anything. But when I saw the CL Roadster, I said, okay, I get it. It's going to be a spectacular car. If they can deliver the product-wise, it's going to be something.
They'll do well.
Do very well.
And like you were even saying, Mark, they are doing the right things. Yeah. And it's but to crack the true luxury market, It takes not only doing everything right, it takes time.
Well, yeah, and GM has learned that with Cadillac. I mean, the CTS-Vs are considered to be every bit, you know, a competitor to the Germans and whatever's out there. And it's been a long slog. It's been 10 years for Cadillac. Mm. And so now they're ready to take this next step, and they know mechanically what that vehicle has to be. I don't think design-wise they have to worry. Mm-hmm. They're going to be very much one of the avant-garde look, the Cadillac of Cadillacs. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they need to be. And if they can deliver the package, they'll be successful.
Mm-hmm. Though I still keep pointing out, and this goes back in the 20s, when Cadillac decided it was going to take on Packard as the premier American luxury
car. With V16s and V12s. And
took them 20 years.
Yep.
Doing everything brilliantly right. It took them 20 years.
And they brought Harley Earl in to start designing LaSalle and Cadillac to be competitive. Yeah.
DC Auto Geek has also got a question for you, Peter. He says, GM announced a ship-to-shore review of its $3 billion global media account. Is this legitimate, a legitimate review, or the first of many Dan Akerson cost-cutting measures?
It's a legitimate review. It is based on a cost-cutting mission, but I also think Joe Iwanek's going to use it as a way to Joe really likes creativity brought to him, and he's looking for the most creative media play. And they've got a huge budget. And every time you change an account in advertising, there are economies that are extracted from the new agency because they're all like, we want the business. So, yeah, there's certainly it's a cost-cutting move. And yeah, Akerson is behind a lot of that. But I think Joel's going to use this as a way to get more creative thinking around GM's media spend, which is staggeringly huge.
Now, they have, what, 20 different companies that do media buying for them. Is this a move just to start paring that down?
Yeah, that's into it. That's part of it, too.
Hmm. Okay, Ross Guitano in Caldwell, New Jersey wants to know, do you guys know where the next chassis will come from for the next generation Ford Mustang? Will it come from any of the new Lincoln offerings, since it's highly rumored to have independent rear suspension?
That's going to be a unique chassis within Ford. And will they use it for other things? Of course they will. No one does just...
No one can afford just to do a
unless
one-off.
Unless you're Ferrari or something.
Yeah. Where you don't even tool it up. You just make it.
Yeah.
Here's one that would be interesting for you, Mark. NHTSA denied Pagani entry into the U.S., ostensibly because of airbags. You know, they're looking for an airbag exemption. And he asks, should there be an exemption for super low-volume cars, and will it ever happen?
Well, actually, there is.
I thought there was.
Yeah.
Even in the next rules, there is. The next rules package.
Yeah. It's low volume, you know.
But why would Pagani be denied?
There was some aspect of the airbag thing that they didn't deliver that they were supposed to deliver.
Okay.
And I think it's also probably Pagani saying, you know what, you're just pissing me off now or something like that. So there's a political
threat. You can ask for certain exemptions, but you have to prove that you have tried or you are in the process of developing or whatnot. So there's, you know, it gets a little gray on the ways to do it. But there are ways to get exemptions on certain volumes.
Yeah, rigging up a series of Jiffy Pop bags isn't going to really fly.
That's not going to work. Okay, Baja Busta wants to know, Peter, what do you think of the 2012 Camry NASCAR commercials?
I think that's just ludicrous, but that's just me. I mean, Toyota's just hell-bent on becoming part of the American fabric, and part of that component is to get into NASCAR, and it's just like, you know, it just puts me to sleep. But, you know, they've got who I consider the most talented driver in NASCAR,
Kyle Busch,
yeah. And they've got Joe Gibbs Racing, which is a fine racing organization. So, but if they flipped a switch and were running Chevys tomorrow, or Fords, you know, they'd still be running good. I mean, it just doesn't matter.
Right.
Making that connection with Toyota, I don't get it.
Here's another question for you, Mark. What are your thoughts on Jack Telnak, who was a guest here a few weeks ago?
What are my thoughts on him?
Yeah.
I personally know Jack. I've known him for a lot of years. I have a lot of respect. If you go back to what he did at Ford Motor Company on the first Fox platform, 79 Mustang Capri. That was a very unique design at the time, and it was a breakthrough. And I give Jack Telnak credit for pushing that through and making it happen. And I think Jack was a great contributor at Ford Design, my take.
In fact, when you think about it, the current generation Ford Mustang traces its roots right back to that Fox platform Mustang that he came out with one in 1979.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing with it, was I bought one. And one of the reasons I bought it, guess what? It was the first V8 five-speed manual transmission car you could have bought for quite some time at the time. It sounded good. It had all the attributes of what that muscle car
yeah,
at
that
the time
was just when
been.
Detroit started to come out of the wilderness
yeah.
with dealing with emissions, and they finally yeah. the electronics started to really come on, and you could get a V8 with
yep.
some power, and yep. that was yeah. significant.
You know, it was. It was a big change. I mean, because, you know, yeah. towards the end of the 70s, things were getting really bad.
Yeah, 165 horsepower Z28 Camaro.
I know. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't even merge with the thing.
So Unsprung wants to know, when is GM going to have a small truck in the U.S. market? I would say it's not. Not anytime soon. That's my guess.
Yeah, there's a huge audience out there that want, you know, smaller trucks. I mean, because I hear it all the time wherever I go, you know, and but these manufacturers just aren't interested in doing it.
No, they're not. And, you know, part of the problem is when you get down to a lease payment or even a monthly financial payment, bank payment, the difference between a full-size truck and a compact truck isn't a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
And the first thing the salesperson in the dealership wants to do is talk you up into the bigger one.
And, you know,
because they get a better sales
commission. And I'm sure savvy viewers out there understand at the end of the year, you can get yourself a full-size pickup, granted not loaded very much, but the value you get yeah. for what you spend is just staggering.
It is, yeah.
Well, you know, there's only a small handful of trucks right now, small ones, of which the Toyota Tundra is the only one that sells in any real numbers. You got the Nissan Frontier, the Ford Ranger, which they've been trying to kill off for years. They've never been able to do it. There's just always enough buyers just not to kill it off.
And there's a new Ranger, which they're not bringing.
But they're not bringing it here because, again, it competes too much with the F-150.
Yeah.
And they're just not going to do it. But GM's got the Canyon and what's the name of the other one? But
Colorado.
Colorado, thank
yeah.
you.
Which also was the H3,
mm-hmm.
basis for the H3, which they never showed.
The Hummer through, H3,
yeah.
That's right. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't see a small truck in GM's future right now myself.
Yeah.
What's going to be interesting is, you know, Chrysler's killing off the Dodge Dakota, but they're also talking about doing a quote-unquote lifestyle pickup truck based off the minivan platform. So we'll have to stay tuned and see if that comes out and how it does. But what's your thoughts, Mark?
Well, I go back when you talk about General Motors. I mean, they had an alliance with Isuzu at one time where they played in that arena, powertrain from Isuzu and things like that. But I don't view that as being real successful. And I tend to agree with everything you've said. You look at what you can buy value-wise today in a full-size pickup. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, if you live in regions of the country, well, this whole rear-wheel drive thing, I mean, I don't get it. I mean, you can equip your truck to drive with rear-wheel drive, but, you know, at the end of the year, there are always price leader trucks yeah. sitting on dealerships, and you can yeah. buy a full-size pickup yeah. for $20,000 or less,
yeah.
and that's a hell of a lot of vehicle
it
for
is.
That money.
It is.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people just don't like the size. They
yeah.
want something smaller.
Exactly.
And,
I get it.
And
but,
you should yeah. make products yeah. for that.
But don't hold your breath waiting for it.
No, that's
right. Yeah.
Okay, Lewis wants to know, when is the next generation Mustang going to be revealed? He says, I'm hearing rumors of a heavy refresh for the 2013 model year and a total redesign on the 50th anniversary.
It's not my position to talk about that, so I'll let it go at that.
I think Mark knows a whole lot more than he's letting on to here.
I have an inkling when it'll be, but I'll just shut up about that.
Well, you know, when did the current generation come out? 2 years ago? I'd have to look it up. But, you know, typically these things are on a four-year product cycle.
Yeah, the next car is all new car. All new. So we shall see.
Yeah. Okay, real good. Well, look, we're hitting the top of the hour here, so it's probably time to wrap it up. But Mark Trossel, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Been great having you on. It's been good to learn a whole lot more about Roush Industries, too, and what all it's capable of doing and getting into as well.
Stay tuned, as they say, right?
That's great. That's great.
Thank you.
And Peter, great seeing you too, man.
See you, John.
As always. And, of course, folks, we really thank you for having tuned in. Don't forget that you can get this show at the iTunes store. It'll be posted there later tomorrow afternoon. Just go to the iTunes store, look for Autoline After Hours. It's free. You can always follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/AutolineDetroit. Or Twitter, twitter.com/AutoLine. Follow Peter's stuff at AutoExtremist.com, or you can follow him at twitter.com/AutoExtremist. He's also got his Facebook page. You can also go look for his new book there, Witch Hunt.
Yeah.
It's on there. But thanks, folks, for having tuned in. Look forward to seeing you all next week.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at AutolineDetroit.tv.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.